Welcome back to the Business Mail Performance Podcast. I am the tired as hell Joe Staub, and that is the almost asleep Matt Powell. And you know what I need to do, Matt? I need to send you some of our next unofficial sponsor stuff. Death Wish coffee in a can, baby. Death Wish coffee in a can.
Joe, do you really think that with my background of where I coach that I don't have a connection to Death Wish coffee? Why don't you just tell me you wanted a sponsorship? I would have just made it happen.
So Death Wish coffee, let's get on this because I've been drinking these things like crack to stay awake because I have a 14-day-old, a 2-year-old, and a 5-year-old in my house. And I work a full-time job. And my wife is home.
So I am the absentee partner this week, man. What the hell did you do? Did you record an episode without me? I'm a little hurt, to be honest.
So, I had to because, and we actually have to get into this on the intro because I reference it in the first minute of the podcast. You own a gym now?
I do. You know, we talk so much about entrepreneurship and business and all that stuff. I made the incredibly terrible decision to buy a gym. So no, it's been a big learning process. I was actually in the middle of my first staff meeting. I'm fortunate enough, Jake, obviously being the busy, incredible professional that he is, had no other time. So you guys made the executive decision to go ahead and record without me. I appreciate that. And I actually listened to a lot of the content and it is just fantastic. You guys get into a lot of the different topics that I'm probably going to hit him up about anyways, as a new entrepreneur owning my own gym and kind of trying to grow that. So I'm super excited about it, man. But tell me, how was it in the interview? How'd you like it?
So no, awesome. So obviously, you know, and we talked about it, we had to jump in right away because he's moving, him and his girlfriend are moving from Colorado to California. And they're literally like, have just moved. So he, you know, just life was getting spiraling. So if we didn't catch him that day, we weren't going to catch him for like a couple weeks or a month or two. So that was one thing, but Jake's a guy I've known since he was in college. He was at Hofstra. He interned for me at one point on the strength side. And he also was a student for me when I was teaching the grad level, he was doing his master's. So, just a guy who I hit off with really well, because personality wise, we get along, we had great conversations. He kind of understood what I was trying to do and where I was coming from as a teacher and a coach and a mentor. And he, being a young but savvy guy, kind of knew what he wanted. Same thing kind of like we talked about with Dr. Orr, you know, very focused guy. And he even says, like, I wasn't really focused. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I found what I wanted to do. And he's like, and then I went all in. So, no, just a really good guy. One, just a genuine guy. And two, he's carved this interesting niche where if you're in the fitness, like CrossFit, the non-collegiate professional sport performance world, weightlifting, you know, Olympic style weightlifting, you know, powerlifting, CrossFit, functional fitness, and also all the things that go around with it, the gear, the supplements, the everything. Jake's the guy. Like, he knows everybody and everyone knows him because he worked at those companies. He wrote those articles. He interviewed those people. He was at all those events. So while a very humble guy, and he doesn't sell it much in the podcast, he knows everybody and everyone loves him because he's such a great guy.
No, I'm definitely sad I missed it. And brother, I listened to a lot of the episode and I was super impressed. You guys got into some really good detail about things that I think will help young coaches or other professionals within the field. And yeah, man, I think you guys did a great job.
Well, thank you. I tried to do what I could by myself as a young mentee from you as my mentor. I tried to elevate my game to be like it would be if you were here with me. Hopefully it didn't suck.
Hey, you're within the top 100 interns I've ever had. So well done. I'm very proud of you.
I thought you only had like 40 interns. All right. So episode 24, Jake Bolley.
Welcome to another episode of the Business Beyond Performance Podcast. I am Joe Staub, and my co-host Matt Powell is not here tonight because he is now a gym owner. He's closing on a gym. He has a staff meeting. He might be jumping in a little bit. We'll have to see, depending on how his day has gone. So congratulations, Matt. We'll get the full story next time he is with us. And tonight's guest, we have Jake Bolley. So someone who I've known actually for a long time, but for those of you who don't know, currently now runs his own show, and I'll let him get into that, kind of how he got there. But working with him when he was at Hofstra doing his undergrad and graduate degrees. He also interned when I was the head strength coach and worked with us in the strength setting. So a variety of experiences working as a personal trainer in the athletic space, himself being a competitive cheerleader, and then now also, you know, being a writer, an editor, a social media personality. And I'll let you, you know, I pick social media personality. That's what we call them. I don't want to call you a guru because I know you and I know you're not a guru. So that's kind of like the quick 1 second introduction. So unofficially, that's who you are, but officially, welcome, Jake. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Thank you, Joe. I really do appreciate you guys having me on, as always. Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, it's funny when people ask me back on my like college career and like if it was worth it and stuff. It's like I always circle back to our classes because that's where I learned the most when it comes to like applying concepts and context into training and everything else. So I'm always grateful for when we get to link up and chat. But yeah, a little bit more about me. I got my start as a trainer. I ended up uprooting my life from Missouri and moved to New York City, New York area. Hofstra is not really New York City, so it took me a minute to get there. But uprooted my life and like wanted to be an editor at Men's Health Magazine. That was the dream. I wanted to be this big journalism editor guy. Ended up landing out at Hofstra in 2011, so my sophomore year of college. Did the personal training thing throughout college as I was also like pursuing writing. And basically throughout that point, I ended up switching my degrees from more of journalistic PR approach to exercise science. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to teach myself how to write. I'll figure that out. Like, I'm never going to be a novelist. That just is what it is. But I could put together an article, a long form article in a fairly timely manner. And I can do that. And I think in simplistic terms, and that's where I think the practice of writing has been an asset for me. But when I did that shift, basically, it opened me to a whole new world. It allowed me to then be exposed to an industry that I wanted to be in very badly, but I wasn't sure how deep I wanted to be involved. So being involved in the actual personal training side gave me exposure to working with different clients, different lifters, which then helps write better. If you know how to coach different athletes, you can write how to coach them a little bit better. A lot of people miss that mark when it comes to journalism and writing for fitness editorials and stuff like that. And yeah, so long story short, trained through college, ended up building up one of the gyms I interned and worked at's website, like built out their blog, was implementing a bunch of different aspects when it comes to building content and whatnot. And somehow, some way, somebody from Vitamin Shop, the big supplement retailer, found me on LinkedIn, headhunted me and was like, hey, we would love for you to come interview for a content writer role. And so I was like, okay, cool. Like, that sounds interesting. Like, I wasn't sure that I wanted to be in full-time like editorial capacity, but I said, sure, screw it. So I basically went and took this interview, ended up getting the job and put training then as a side project. So I still kept on clients, still kept training in the evenings. And this is also while I was finishing my master's with you. And eventually down the road, I was at a random fitness photo shoot, ended up meeting the guy who founded a website called Barbend. If you're heavily vested in the strength sports world, you have more than likely heard of them. So I was brought on back in October of 2016 to Barbend, was the first employee, pretty much helmed a lot of the fitness vertical of that site. So building out all the tutorial content, pretty much the whole direction of the fitness, I had a pretty big hand in because we are obviously a startup. We had a very small team. So everybody played a really big role. And David really was a great mentor at helping me understand that world and be really dynamic and fluid with that and build my skill set there. And I did that for 4 years. And this is while I was also still doing some side hustle stuff, still coaching clients and lifters on the side. And then eventually pandemic hit, everything, the world basically got flipped, turned upside down. And it made us, well, made myself and my girlfriend move out to Missouri for 4 months while it was really bad in the city. We dodged that bullet. And it really got me to thinking about the trajectory of my life and where I wanted that to go and where I saw myself in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years from now. And I loved and I am forever grateful for the role I played at Barbend. But towards the end of it, I started getting a lot of like this angst, almost like an internal anxiety every single day. And I couldn't pinpoint what it was. It wasn't needing more money. It wasn't needing more freedom because I had plenty of freedom there to like pick and choose the projects I wanted to implement and do. It was eventually that I came to realize during the pandemic, once everything slowed down and I removed myself from the noise of the city, it was that I felt like I wasn't able to really like, I think, open up and like cut loose when it comes to like building things that I had a strict envision for. Because even if I think you are at a startup and you're one of the first employees on, it's never really your thing. As much as I wanted it to be my thing, it never will be. And as much as I played a role in helping to build it up to the massive media conglomerate is now, like, it will never be my own baby. Like, I can take parts, I can take ownership in some of the verticals, yeah. But like, I realized that, wow, like, this is where I want to be. I don't want to be working under somebody else. I want to create my own thing. I know I have the skills to do it. I know I have the grit and the tenacity to do it. So I decided to leave and start my own side projects. And I remember actually calling you, I believe it was in early 2020 or the summer of 2020 during like the pandemic. And I was asking you and picking your brain actually about a doctorate. And like, because when I first got pushed into the entrepreneurship world, I thought I had this clear vision, right? And it's like, I was like, I know exactly what I want to do. And this idea of this project that I had going with my business partner, Ojan Loki, for this nutrition and training subscription service, we thought would take off and just instantly be a hit. I think every lesson an entrepreneur learns is always very contextual based on what they have going for them, but it definitely did not take off the way we thought. And that hit me with even more anxiety than when I was working in 9 to 5. So now I've quit my job and I'm out doing my own thing. And I'm like, oh shit, I am a failure. What the hell did I do? I had a good gig. I was getting paid a lot. I made my own schedule in the 9 to 5. I was freaking out. So I was like, I'll go back for my doctorate. And then it's like, it took me another couple of weeks to a month to kind of like settle back down and be like, okay, where do you really want to take this? Because I quickly learned that the business that we had built, I love to death, and I love Ojan, and he's an amazing business partner, but it wasn't exactly the vision I had too, because I realized that I was like, okay, I was working under somebody full-time, now I co-founded something, but it's still not fully mine. So it, like, for a minute, the band-aid of co-founding was nice because I was like, oh, I'm doing my own thing. And then it hit me like 6 months later, hey, this isn't really actually your own thing. There are always limitations when working with a business partner. And that's what eventually pushed me to where I'm at now, which I'm thankful and grateful to say, I feel more at peace with everything that's going on. And what I have going on right now is I run consulting services on the side of what I do for SEO. So basically, anytime coaches, trainers, businesses want to be found more organically through Google via creating content, just understand that world better, because that's a whole complex world we could dive into in this chat if you want. I'm kind of the point man for helping them do that. As I build more and more of my projects, I continue to do A/B testing for that world to see what works. And then I build frameworks and help others contextualize basically what they're building into the frameworks that I've seen really good results with. On top of that, I am currently building out the infrastructure of an app for training that I will be launching soon. And then my main baby right now is a training shoe and apparel review site. And I run that in synchronization with the YouTube channel where I host reviews and also fitness content to be a passive lead generator into, number one, my personality and who I am, so I connect with a greater community, because that's why I absolutely love YouTube out of all the social media platforms right now, but also be a nice passive lead generator for some of this stuff. So it's like, if people see my content and they're like, hey, I can get behind what this guy's talking about, I would love to learn more about him, hopefully they end up checking out my site, the subscription service, the app, et cetera. That's what I kind of do right now in a nutshell. I still work with remote clients. I still have some in-person clients. I'm a little spread thin these days, and some days I want to beat my head into the wall, but like, I'm more at peace with what I'm doing and the projects I'm taking on than I ever have been.
So awesome intro. See, that's why I knew I couldn't do it justice, and I wanted you to just go with it. So one of the things me and Matt say pretty much every episode is one of the reasons we have certain people on is because they give a depth of answer. So I'm always taking notes. I got my notes going on right here. There's about 15 different things I need to like start asking you about from just what you said there. But no, that's one. Thank you for that, because that's the kind of stuff we're looking for that people want to know, is they want to hear your story. They want to hear your journey. And then they're going to get those questions from just the way you communicate, because again, it's an articulate point of view from experience. So you're bringing things up, right? Where I'm going to start right now is you reverse engineered. So you said you felt the stress, you felt the anxiety, and you had that, you know, what am I going to do in 1, 5, 10 years? One of the things we talk about a lot with people is, how did they reverse engineer their success or their path to what they're doing to become successful? So let's dig into that a little bit. What was your reverse engineering strategy, and what did that, you know, you thought about it, but what did that actually look like?
So it's really funny, man. So when I was at Barbend, I did so many different things and not everything I loved or agreed with, but there were definitely some things that I really loved. But I think when I left that role, I had like this layer of almost like, I don't want to say anger, but it was almost like resentment at myself for not kind of like figuring out my shit sooner, to not let this anxiety build up to a point where I felt like I had to literally leave and uproot everything I was doing just to figure out and get myself closer to where I wanted to be. So there were things there that I hadn't really uncovered. So then when I dove into the training / content nutrition, lessons, whatever vertical of that front, I was like, cool. I love building fitness content. I love interacting with community, yada, yada. Let's do this. But then to that point, how I mentioned earlier, it was a co-founded project and there were definitely some limitations and some pitfalls that we hit just with the overall like platform we decided to use, the UX of it. A lot of things were very frustrating. And so after, I think, the noise of jumping into that vertical from going from full-time editorial settled down, it helped me realize like, hey, here are things that I like from both of those worlds. Here's like projects and verticals I helped build up for Barbend that I absolutely love and adore. And like, I actually don't want to give up. I actually want to keep building these out and doing it on my own because I genuinely enjoy them and they make me happy. And then I pulled similar aspects and thought patterns from the training nutrition subscription service because there were definitely areas of that that I loved and some that I really didn't like. And I was like, okay, what do I like really love about this? Like, what can I take and build from this? And then that helped me kind of reorg pretty much everything I'm doing and just decide like, hey, I really love building YouTube content and I really love shoes. Like one of my dreams growing up was to build my own shoe company. Now that's kind of shifted. Like I would love for my site to either one partner with a big shoe company and eventually help collaborate with shoes or even get brought on by a bigger shoe, big shoe company and be like a director of their content and verticals in that front. But later on down the road, obviously, but that's like a vertical that I realized like, holy crap, like I really love doing this. So now it's like, I'm continuing to do that and scratch that itch with both a written and visual means. And I'm also getting to scratch the itch of what I loved about the training and nutrition service, which was interacting with the community and lifters every day, being able to build like content that I think has more context built in than what meets the eye in a lot of the stuff that we consume on a daily basis. So building out videos, building out this app that I'm hoping is going to help folks, I think, conceptualize and visualize their training from a slightly different mindset. And that's kind of helped me like reverse and engineer and peel back all of this anxiety and all of these things that I thought I wanted to really understand like, hey, this is what I actually want. And I think we hear about it all the time when it comes to how you reverse engineer a lot of ways, especially with entrepreneurs. It's like, I figured out what I wanted to do by sinking my teeth into things that I thought I wanted, but then realized I really didn't like. And so like, having my toes in all these different verticals, it's really helped me now narrow my focus. And even though I have less time than I did before and I'm more stressed, it's like, it's a weird thing because I feel more at peace. And that's how I know, like I reverse engineered it to a point in which I'm now spending my days doing things that, yeah, I don't always love, but at the end of the day, I'm grateful to be doing. And I think that's the biggest part. That's like even tasks that are mundane that I'm like, fuck, I'm still like, I am really grateful that I get to be waking up and doing this. Like it could be so much different. And yeah, that was kind of the process. It's mostly just trying things I didn't like to eventually land and be honest with myself and be like, hey, this is what you actually want to do. Like, let's stop taking this external anxiety and stem from everything else around you and actually focus on internally what you want to do and how you want to spend your days.
Very nice. So that actually brings me to the next question. And you hit on it a few times from an ownership standpoint. So you reverse engineered what you're good at, what you like, and then the path to get there. Like you said, sink your teeth into a few things, realize they don't taste good. But when did you really get that entrepreneurial itch? Like what was the moment, if there was one, or what was that, you know, the inflection point? Everyone wants the story, right? Oh, I was sitting having a cup of coffee and it hit me, you know, but when was that moment that you knew being an entrepreneur and being the boss where, you know, to your point, it's never really yours if you didn't found it. Then when you're co-founding it, you still have that push and pull of, well, eventually you guys are going to disagree. Like I've said it, I've experienced it, I've lived it, I've coached it. I've done everything in it, business, you know, blah, blah, blah. Dual co-founders, dual CEOs. never works. Eventually it blows up. So when did you realize, what was that aha moment for you to take ownership 100% for you?
I love this question. This is actually something I've been really trying to figure out lately, especially like as even like in my couple therapy, my girlfriend, like we touch on a lot of topics that have helped me really start peeling back these layers mm-hmm. to focus in on this. So it's like, when I think about my upbringing, right? My childhood, my dad has worked the same job since he was out of college. My mom worked the same job since she was out of college. She was a teacher. She just retired 2 or 3 years ago. So like growing up, like I never had been exposed to entrepreneurship. I actually didn't have any family members who actually owned their own business. Everybody worked for somebody else. Mm-hmm. So it's weird because like moving out to New York on a whim at the age I did, I was kind of like, I don't want to say a black sheep because it's not like I was like disavowed from ever coming home, but it was like, there was something that my family didn't really do. Like just pulling the trigger. Like I chose Hofstra and moved out there and I had never even visited Long Island. I just was like, screw it. I want to be by the city. This is what I'm doing. I know it. I feel it. I'm going to rip it and do it. And so every, I think, step that I took to reach where I'm at today was helping me get there. I don't think I could have done the entrepreneur world right outside of college. I don't think I was mentally ready. So it's like, when you look at the trajectory of going to a school I wasn't familiar with, it was still safe. I still had structure to it. I wasn't fully on my own. I still had the structure of schooling, which helped me then, I think, ease into a little bit of like, okay, I'm out of my element, but I'm going to adapt. Then it's like, I started personal training and then I started working at a content shop. I worked at a big corporate content world. It was like, okay, I don't like this. My stress is through the roof. This sucks. Then I dipped my toes into the startup world. And I was like, okay, this is what it's like running a business from the ground up. Like this is what it's like to have this amount of workload with this few bodies and this much stress. And it was kind of like, okay, so I went from the school, which was a safe structured route, but still out of my element. Then I went to the corporate route where I was like, okay, I don't like that. It was like a good, I think, learning process to be like, nah, 9 to 5 is not for you. But going to a startup 9 to 5, it's a little bit different because it's a bit more lucrative. You feel like you have more say in things. So that kind of helped mentally prep me for what it's like to build like a content powerhouse from the ground up, because it is a crap ton of work. And I got burnt out, honestly, too. And that's a whole thing we could talk about as well towards the end of it. But it kind of helped mentally ease me into this idea of this is what it's like to build something like this with a very small team. So then it's like taking that next step of leaving that job, which was very scary, especially because I did love it and loved all the people I worked with, to work with my co-founder. That's like another step into the full ownership. I was now on my own, but I had a co-founder. I had somebody to lean on if I ever needed help. I had somebody to lean on when it came to my stress, my anxieties. And then once I think I was mentally prepped at a point for that, which was like 5-6 months in, I finally was like, I can do this. I know I can. I have built these tools. I have built the skill sets to go out on my own, take full ownership, and have confidence to do it. Because truthfully, like, I don't think I would have been able to do it had I not gone through these steps. And it's funny because I always say to my girlfriend, I'm like, God, I wish I did this sooner. She's like, you weren't ready. You physically would not have been able to handle this. She's like, you needed those 4 years at Barbend. You needed this time co-founding this project. You needed to go to school and finish your master's and be in an element there where you're out of your comfort zone. So really it's like, as much as I want to say, like, I wish I'd started sooner, because obviously everybody says that, I don't think I would have been mentally ready to do it. And now it's like, I'm finally at a point where I'm like, cool, this is stressful, but I know I can do it because I've encountered a lot of the similarities of stuff that I navigate that gives me my anxieties on a daily basis.
No, very cool. And again, it's an interesting I'm saying it for like the fifth time, but as people give these answers we have on these shows, just like you just did, it opens up a door. So the door I want to go down now is talking about, right, you were saying you went, we go back to the beginning, you were saying, you know, you went to Hofstra, you switched majors a little bit, you got into exercise science, then you're saying you did your master's and you're a little out of your element, right? So I actually, for people who don't know, because we didn't really explicitly say it, I was actually an adjunct instructor and had you as a student. And I had mentioned having you interned with us and helped us on the strength conditioning side. So I know what you're capable of academically, and I know you're a smart guy and, you know, you'd be successful, right? So you have an undergrad and master's in exercise science and you're a CSCS, right? I'm sure you might have some other certifications. Well, we're talking SEO, UX, you know, business verticals. That has nothing, and trust me, I didn't teach you any of that because at the time, that wasn't what I was trying to teach you. So How did you, in terms of stress, overcoming challenges, and as you, you know, talk that reverse engineering approach, how'd you layer the education on? Was it something that you just did it and figured it out as you did it? Kind of that Richard Branson, that quote, like, you know, when someone asks you to do something and you don't know how to do it, say yes and figure it out. Or did you also have like kind of a plan structure to, hey, you know, oh, I got to do this SEO thing. I'm going to read these books. I'm going to talk to these people. Like, did you kind of get it as you went? Did you have a specific plan? Was it a little bit of both? So tell us how you supported the effort with the education outside of your actual education.
Yeah. So I knew which skills I wanted to build up, and I knew like areas of my life that I envisioned. And I was like, okay, like I'm not going to get this skill built up by doing training or by having this academic background. So it was a little bit of both, right? So it's like, I'm by no means the smartest guy or like the most out of the box creative thinker here. But at the same time, like, I think if you put something in front of me and you show me how to do it a little bit, I'll go pull the string there and figure it out. So when it comes to like user experience of a website, when it comes to search engine optimization, these are things that I was starting to be exposed to at Barbin that I wasn't able to like really sink my hands deep into. So it's like, I got a taste. And then it's like on my free time, I started learning more and more and more outside of just that job. So then it's like, I knew once I did my own thing, like I want to be able to implement my own stuff the way I want to. I know it works. I know what frameworks tend to work, and I can A/B test a lot better with that. So it's like with SEO stuff and stuff like that, it's more of just like a, hey, I know I want to build this website, but like, what tools do I need to do that? What do I need to learn more about? And there are obviously things that I just don't have time to learn about and do. Like I cannot build, like I cannot create like code in my layout and stuff like that. Like I'll hire somebody who's better at that than me. But when it comes to like the overall consumption of what I'm creating, that's what interests me. Like that's what I want to learn as much as I can about. And that's where it's like in our field and in this industry, it's really interesting to look at the big players that do it well, but also to just explore and test and use a lot of the analytics side to do some of this A/B stuff when it comes to what works best with consumption. How do people respond to this? And that's very interesting to me because there's also a level of psych in there too that we could factor in as well. So to answer your question, it was a little bit of both. Like there's a structured plan in the sense of like, I know what skills I want to build up on based off of the output and outcomes I want for the business. But also there was a little bit of like, hey, here's this, we're going to teach you about this. And then it's like me taking the next step where it's like going to my bachelor's, like nobody made me get my master's. I wanted to do that because I wanted to learn more. I wanted to really sink my teeth in. So that's how I think about it with this. It's like, I'm forever grateful for the folks who showed me and exposed me to that world, but it's been like, it's been way more fun being able to take all that and like apply what I learned on my own to build something really cool.
No, awesome. So now let's take that and let's pull back a little bit. And let's go to that person now who, you know, you mentioned you weren't ready. You know, when you and your girlfriend were talking, oh, you couldn't have done this a while ago, you weren't ready. So for the people, what would you say, or what's the advice for the person who is, you know, you 5 years ago? It's in there, but it's not formulated. The experience, the belief, the confidence, it's all coming together, but it's not there. But they're listening to us tonight. They can hear you having been there, live the walk, you know, talk the talk. What's the advice you give someone who's the 5 year ago you?
I think the best pieces of advice that I'd give is number one, learn as much as you can, because I think a lot of the I'm not readiness was also a lot of imposter syndrome, which I know so many people encounter and so many people have. And the best ways to counter that is just by simply learning more. By sinking your teeth in and putting in the effort every single day, you build this subconscious or unconscious confidence, in my opinion, that you don't normally get by just like randomly waking up one day and you're like, I'm ready for entrepreneurship. It's like, no, you need to just continually beat down this mindset of like, oh, I don't think I could do it on my own. Like, I'm not smart enough. I'm not good. I literally have, those are like 9 out of my 10 days where I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot. What am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? But the constant just beating down the trade and learning more and being exposed to different personalities helps like build the subconscious effort, I think, to help really help mold that internal feeling that some of us or most of us really have. Because even now, like I still have this internal feeling where it's like, it seems like it's so crystal clear where I want everything to go and where I want everything to be, but it's like, I'm still figuring it out. But as I learn more and as I sink more time and resources into learning and building the skills I want, it's been really helping to shape that. And it's almost formulating naturally. So that being said, it's learn more as much as you can in the moment where you're at. And then also too, what really helped me was writing down all of my strengths, weaknesses, and then like basically goals, and looking at how all of these related together. And then actually what's funny is asking either a coworker or somebody who knows you really well, a really good friend, and asking them to like look at this list and say, hey, can you look at this and like tell me if you agree with like how I think of this? And a lot of times, like for a lot of my weaknesses, my girlfriend has been like, no, like these are actually some of your best strengths. You just don't think you're good at it. And so seeing that and then having that like external party give you that confidence there with the additional learning and like the idea of like where you want to at least take your skill set has helped me really like kind of like dial in exactly what I'm trying to do and create. And I think, I honestly don't think that it ever really goes away, because I think if you're creating a business, you're always trying to create some level of growth and trajectory. So I feel like no matter what, like it's more crystal clear than it's ever been. But at the same time, like I'm just building the things that I love and sinking my time and resources into building the skills that I really enjoy. And it's actually helping to shape this entity that I wasn't sure of before that's all of a sudden like kind of presenting itself. And then as you do this enough, you just kind of, I think, realize you have this like weird thing where it's like when something feels right, you're way more confident in just being like, yeah, this is it. Or like when there's an opportunity that's presented to you, it's like a no-brainer to take it. Things just like boom. And it's because I think we're doing all this daily, almost like conscious / subconscious effort and work that it helps shape and create a more, I think, finite feeling on these internal feelings that a lot of us have, especially folks who are at 9 to 5s, who are like, I want to do something on my own.
So let's speak to that. You mentioned previously content and the quality at which you do it at. And you've also referenced how, you know, you're not trying to reinvent fire. If there's an area where you're not strong, you find someone and bring them in to help you. You source other experts. So let's talk about that in terms of now, right? So kind of pulling it all together. You have this background. It's helping give you some skills and experiences to get to where you want to go, where you're able to kind of step in and take the ownership, right? And as you're saying, for anyone trying to do that, it's education, it's constantly improving, it's constantly sharpening your sword, but it's knowing when to find someone else or listen to someone else or ask someone else. How, you know, go back to that idea on your content and the quality at which you do it at, and kind of hone in on what is important to you in that standpoint. What do you look for? Are you a quantity guy? Are you a quality guy? How do you sift through the noise and all the other bullshit out there, whether it's the fakers on YouTube or it's someone who's just spending a ton of money on advertisement and they're front and center over you, even though they're not as good as you product-wise or knowledge-wise or whatever it may be? How do you pull that back, and what do you look at that? How do you think of it and all those things? Because if I'm, again, I'm that person sitting there, I heard how you did it, I heard your advice to do it, and now I have to go do it. What's your advice?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple different lines you got to walk. And number one is owning exactly who you are and what you're really good at. So for example, when building like a site that I'm doing, it's really difficult to compete with some of the guys who have been doing it for years on years on years. However, where I then take a spin is trying to show more of like an ownership / personality in the stuff I'm creating. I think, for example, like I'll just give you like a training shoe review. There's so much, I don't know if I can cuss here, but I've already done it, some like fuckery in our business and industry. That it's like you can look up any review for a shoe and you can clearly see who knows what the hell they're talking about. And so by identifying, okay, there's clearly a lack of content, like quality and personality here, I can leverage who I am to actually improve. And the people, when they're ready and when Google actually starts prioritizing some of my site, because it takes time, it will be, I think, way better perceived. And also just being able to identify too shifts in the industry. So where content is heading, like I have things that I do with content that are not always fun, but I know are necessary basically to compete with these guys. But also understanding like, okay, cool. I have this like framework of what I know works based off of what Google looks for, what all these search engines are looking for, and how I like to actually consume content. Now let me take a step back and think about how can I leverage my personality in this? And also, if I was a consumer, what would I want to see? What answer, what questions, what kind of content would I need to make myself feel confident? And also, like, when I visited this site, I feel happy doing so. I feel like I would had my questions answered, because I get fucking frustrated when I search up something and then read a source and it's terrible. And I'm like, fuck, I just wasted 2 minutes. And so that constant reminder, even when things get like, when I'm like dead tired and lazy, I'm like, you got to just push through. Think about if you were the consumer, you're not going to want to visit something or consume a piece of content that is half-assed, basically. So when it comes to the quality and quantity, I like to blend those two. I like to perform at a high volume because that's just how I function. I go, 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 go. But at the same time, know when to scale back when I'm treading too far into volume versus like the quality aspect. So I've been really conscious of like building schedules and things like that to make sure I walk that line in a harmonious manner that actually is conducive for myself too, because I think anybody, if you're listening, if you are at all like a content creator, even part-time, like the creative stories we all have get tapped so easily. And knowing when I think to kind of pull back and just be like, you know what, I'll do this tomorrow because right now I'm not going to give it my best effort. And honestly, I think it's like with training or anything, the work that you put in off the screen, so like the work I put in that's not actually presented to you and what you see, I think helps really move that needle, because it then presents itself in one, the overall structure and quality and how things are perceived. And that's been like, it's been something that's really cool too, because I like, you know, when you're on the right page, because like every day on YouTube, for example, I don't have the biggest channel, but it's growing fairly fast and organically, especially in the tiny little niche I play in. And I get tons of comments that are like, wow, like you answered all of my questions, or wow, this was structured perfectly. And then that helps kind of reinforce the prior two topics we just hit on.
Nice. So again, drawing on that customer feedback or that audience feedback, depending on which way we're looking at it. So let's also go into, you know, your multi-channel. And I don't mean that specifically by media type, you know, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. You're multi-channel in terms of things you do. As people have heard, you know, you still do some personal training on the side, remote coaching, that kind of stuff. You also do some consulting for SEO optimization and other businesses looking to do the things you're doing. You also do, you know, so let's talk about how you got there. So how did you layer those things? And you talked about a little bit, you started training and this, and, you know, kind of your trajectory gave you some of that, but how did you get to it now? So you chose to leave Barbend, and you could have just done one thing, but now you're still doing 5-6 things. Did you layer them? Did you just absorb them all at once? How do you give the pushes and pulls and the time to each one? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally. And so there are non-negotiables that I have, which are number one, like in all the things I do, one thing I never want to give up is physically coaching people, because I think despite not like loving personal training full time, if you have your toes or feet in the fitness industry at all, you need to constantly be working with different athletes, coaching different athletes, and sharpening that skill set. So it's like, in my mind, we have all these people in the fitness world that talk about all these topics, but they don't even coach athletes. And it's like, how can you speak to this topic when you don't actually have like the roots and actually like drilling down some of these skills? So that was a non-negotiable when taking that leap. So that was like a constant I've always had. So I've always had clients throughout. And another constant that I've always wanted is writing. I really love writing. Can I do it all the time? No. Do I get burnt out frequently? Yes. But that was also another thing. And that's why when I jumped into that co-founding project, one of our big plays was written content on a subscription service. So every week you get like this new, like huge thing of content about a various topic. So that was something that I wanted to keep on too. With the SEO consulting and the side project of this training shoe and apparel review site and the videos, those took a minute because I think I needed the confidence to actually dive into those, and also the realization that I still wanted to do them. So those happened like after I had done these two things. So I had still been training, I'd still been writing, building up the subscription service. Those were a little bit more constant. And once those were a little bit more automatic and I was a bit more settled, then I took on something else. Then I brought on something else. And the reason I like to layer my stuff is because I ebb and flow where I give my energy to based off of where I think my skill sets are lagging. So for example, with like SEO consulting, I only take on a certain amount of clients and they have to already have like some level of vision or established mindset of where they want to go, because I just don't have time or bandwidth to bring on somebody brand new. But I bring them on at times because either it's a favor, obviously, for friends in the industry, or it's because, cool, I really want to start doing some A/B testing and framework testing with what I'm building, with also what they have, and let's start seeing what works really well. Because at the end of the day, if I can help them out and then that reciprocates to my site or vice versa, I share what I've learned with them, everybody wins. There's enough eyeballs to go around. There's enough consumers to go around. And I think that is something that helps me, I think, pick the projects I do. And it's not because I want to do them all the time. It's because when I think about the skills I want to build and what I need to build for my main babies, which is now the training shoe and apparel review site, I think about, okay, I can sharpen up some skills here. Like I can sharpen up these tools. So it's like, for example, in Denver, I just started doing in-person training again a few months ago. And I did that because I wanted to start getting, again, my toes in the in-person game of coaching and start building up those skills again. And it's like, now that I'm doing it a couple hours, like 5 hours a week, I'm like, damn, I really miss this. This is great. And it translates and ripples into the everything else I'm doing. So even when I'm writing a piece of content that has nothing to do with fitness, I'm still like, the interactions I'm getting in these other realms of expertise help kind of all trickle into this one thing, because it gives me just a different viewpoint and mindset of that. And am I layering things all the time? Yes, but those layers ebb and flow based off of my energy. So it's like right now my main thing is building the site and this YouTube channel, so that's taken up a priority of my time. And so I've dropped a few SEO consulting clients. I've dropped the course I used to run for coaches and trainers just because it's a bandwidth issue, and I'm already doing so much of the skill set of what those would have been improving that I'm like scratching that itch and not necessarily needing to run myself so dry.
No, very cool. So funny story, you talk about people in the industry who have opinions and promote things and don't know. So I got asked the other day to review a case study for a project. I'll leave it at that. If I say what it is, everyone will know and I'll feel bad because it'll blow someone's spot up. So I got asked actually by a former athlete who I used to work with, who now works at this place, to review this thing. So I get it sent to me and I'm looking at it and like, I'm like, this doesn't make sense. So I find who wrote the case study. On paper, bachelor's, master's, PhD, experience, bing, 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 bing. So the first thing I noticed was the case study was about collegiate athletes. The problem was this person, while they had some experience, has never worked in the collegiate setting and has never worked with the collegiate athlete.
Yeah.
So the timelines, the this, the that, you know, all the specifics, again, that was the 95% of my career was in the collegiate space from a strength and conditioning perspective. So it was like, that's why it didn't make sense. You've never touched that population. You really don't know. You're going from the textbook and experience that isn't relatable, though you think it is. So again, just a funny story of, so I got asked to rewrite the case study from the perspective it's supposed to be from. So I had to do that the other day, just as a friendly thing. And there, so now, right, here's my segue, right? It's like, we practiced this and I've thought about how to do this stuff. It was a friendly thing. I got asked to do it. Well, you mentioned that. You mentioned SEO clients, oh, people you know in the industry. Yes. How do you monetize? How do you say no or don't? How do you, you know, I know you have a lot of friends in the industry, a lot of big name people who other people from social media and whatnot would know, just because, again, that's the circle you've built. How do you monetize? Why don't you monetize? When do you monetize? You know, all that stuff. Now, again, we don't need specifics on how much you make or anything. That's not what we're trying. But just how do you work within that, especially when it's a friend who says, hey, do this for me?
Yeah, that's always, dude, that's still something I struggle with, especially when working with friends. I think that's a whole nother beast versus like actually like charging for what the business actually is. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a lot better actually at, as my time just gets more and more finite, I tell people, I'm like, hey, I can do this, but I'm going to charge you this for this. And it's funny because like when I first started doing this, I was always like very timid. I was like, oh, maybe I should ask for this much. And like in reality, like it was way lower than the industry standard, but it's like, I didn't have that confidence yet. I didn't have this literal mental stretch to where I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. If you want me to do this, I'm going to try to do this because I know I'm worth this. And that is what it is. And despite starting out and like not having that confidence, the more and more I kind of like, honestly, like have no time, it's helping me, I think, establish better boundaries for one, charging what I need to charge for what it is. And two, not feeling bad about it, because the way the world works, like you need to make your own and you also need to earn what is deserved when it comes to your skill sets. Yep. And so it's funny now that I've like put out price points for people, like there's not even a bat of an eye. They're like, yeah, that's fine. That's good. So I'm like, damn, this whole time I could have been charging what I knew I should be, but felt too bashful to do. So when it comes to like monetizing in situations like that, I think it's once again, like practicing getting used to like knowing that, hey, like I own my shit. I'm good at what I do. I can charge this, and feeling confident in yourself. Because I think when you're starting out, there's always that, once again, imposter syndrome telling you like, oh, what do you know? You're a jackass. Like you can't charge that. This big company is charging this and you don't compare to them. But it's like, once you just get more reps in, I think you build more confidence there. So in that context, that's how I monetize now. Are you interested in like how I monetize other areas of my life?
Yeah, let's go. The door is open.
Yeah. So other ways that I monetize right now, I like obviously have my own clients that I work with. We have the training and nutrition subscription service that I co-founded with my buddy. That's all passive at this point. Like we don't touch that ever really, just do frequent updates or answer FAQs here and there. I make money through YouTube on ads. That's been growing and super nice. And then off the top of that, with the site itself, when you do a review site, you obviously have affiliate links in there. Does that bias my opinion? No. However, making a couple of bucks here and there off of affiliate sales actually helps me a lot because it helps me buy more product. And I think the review industry is very sketchy and I do not like how undisclosed a lot of stuff is. And I think that's one of my projects actually going forward on YouTube. Like it's probably going to come in the next couple of months, but I actually want to talk about how I make money, especially with reviews, and talk about how reviewers make money. And like, I think a lot of people don't actually know that side of the industry. And I think it's very interesting. And I think it helps people then also recognize the bullshit, because there's a lot of bullshit. And the more and more I sink my teeth in, dude, it's like, it's starting to piss me off to a high degree. We could talk about that in a minute, but so I monetize through that. And then also obviously through SEO clients and one-off freelance projects I do, like I'll write articles for big sites here and there that just like throw big bounce money at me. I'm like, this project sucks, but damn, the money is nice. So I still do projects like that. And I call those my humble projects, because it's like a good reminder of like, whenever I'm feeling lazy with my personal shit, I do this work and I'm like, this is why I don't do corporate things, because this work stinks, but damn, it pays well. And yeah, like I think, and also like I have some relationships with different like companies when it comes to partnerships and whatnot and through affiliate stuff like that. But that's pretty much like all little verticals I monetize on now.
Nice. So there's a story in here. It's like a kid. He like, what is it? Ryan's Playhouse. It's a little kid whose mom was like a marketing manager and like basically quit her job and went full time into doing YouTube for him. And then the dad, so they have a show on Nickelodeon. And I think he just got sued or had to pay like 10 million. Someone fact checked me on this. It was like $10 million because he didn't disclose in his toy reviews that he was being paid, or something to the effect of like, people thought he was giving these like unbiased reviews as a little kid. Like, I like the Jake Power Ranger. But it was actually like a whole racket in the back. And then they slapped him with a fine. But it was like the kid, you know, the kid's little entity made like $40 million and they gave him like a $10 million fine. So they're like, yeah, here's the money. Thanks. Catch you later. So yeah, it's a weird industry, but just a really interesting, when you said that, that's the first thing I thought of, is like, oh yeah, there's bullshit everywhere. And there's even bullshit in like little kids' toys.
Yeah. And it's like, and the thing is like, I don't think having affiliate relationships is ever really a bad thing, because we all have relationships with people, and people need to understand too, like reviewers have to make money in some way. So it's like normal for them to have partnerships and like relationships with different companies. But at the end of the day too, I think there is always a degree of like a genuine nature that shines through content. It's how you prop it, and you should always disclose. But yeah, man, God, it's so frustrating. Like my big pet peeves right now, especially on YouTube, especially with training shoe reviews, is there are very few people that actually like highlight them training in the shoes, highlight them actually doing what the shoe is meant to do, which is perform. So it's like, I was watching this one review the other day. They put up a video that was like competing with one of mine. Like, mine's obviously crushing it, but it was like, they took out a Clippers and like measured the shoe's foam. They're like, it supports this much weight. I'm like, do you realize when you're displacing weight in multiple directions, the arch and musculature of your foot is going to displace that in a wide range and not just on one? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, why can't we talk about what matters? So my gripe is not even on like the non-disclosing, because that's a whole nother beef, but it's like the people just who have no idea what the hell they're doing, or they're like, just a, like, it's like, I don't know, man. If you're going to work in that industry, you need to live and die by what you're physically sinking your teeth in. Otherwise, like, to your point, it's all bullshit. Like, I have my favorite shoes. Yeah. And I'll tell people, right? Like, in this context, I like this shoe, in this context, I like this shoe, but there's always contextual layers there needed. And also I'm wearing the shit out of all the shoes and I'm like, hey, like, this isn't going to be your best bet. Even though I like it, try this instead. I don't know. I think there's a level of genuine personality that needs to be present for anything to be taken seriously. And I think as the industry and as us as consumers continue to wise up even more through like the BS that we're constantly thrown, it's going to pay dividends, I think, for folks who are trying to be genuine and helping versus like just trying to push content for a buck. Because we're seeing it now on social media with Instagram, for example. Like, how many times you scroll past a post and like people don't even acknowledge it anymore if it's like a fucking like terrible ad, or like they're just pushing a product because you know they got paid. Like, all of a sudden it's like your favorite influencer is pushing this greens product, and it's like, there are ways to integrate this in that doesn't look so freaking lazy. So and just, it's like, yeah. And I don't know, man. I think as content creators, like, you got to be more creative with it, but also like you have to live and die by what you're actually promoting, because people are getting better at sniffing through the BS. Mm-hmm. And
So how about this, right? That's one of the reasons me and Matt have actively chosen to not invest heavily in our visualization, if that's the word, on social media, right? So we have an Instagram, we throw up some really basic stuff, basically, hey, this is who we have talking, this is when they're talking, and this is what they're talking about. That's it. And because we sunk money into post-production and making sure the audio was decent, even though my microphone, sometimes I got to get a better one. I sound like I'm in an ocean sometimes, sometimes I don't. That's a whole other problem. That's an investment thing. I got to get there. So, but that's what we've chosen. It's like, okay, we want better audio quality. We want a product that shows up on time. We want a product that's edited. You know what? Well, we don't have the resources to funnel money into like a massive social media thing. All right, perfect. We're going to go simple, basic, to the point. But that's also what we're trying to do in this podcast, is we're getting to the point that it almost ties in perfectly in the sense of, we're not flashy. We're not doing anything crazy. We're here to help people. We're here to give them a message. And you know what? We're not trying to sell them on the visual or holding the greens being like, check it out, you know, but it's just a weird world, right? I look at it to part of what you were saying, right? For anyone listening who, oh man, he's a shoe guy. He's really passionate. He just went in on the, you know. Well, I look at it as knowing you personally, right? It's kind of one of your non-negotiables, and it's what you went back to before. You know, you referenced it in terms of both, you know, personal lifestyle and then also business. But I'm going to bring it up from a business standpoint right now. Like, one of my non-negotiables is when me and Matt started to do this, right? We have little kids. My wife is pregnant with her third. You know, she's due in a few weeks. You know, Matt just had, his wife just had a second baby. So we do this stuff at night. We're both East Coast. You're in Colorado, so you're a couple hours behind us, right? Like, we do this at night. We bring people on. We talk. I work a full day. Matt works a full day. We have our other side hustles and we're doing this. It's like, okay, well, we do this because we love it and it's a passion. But the reason we do it late is so we can have dinner and put our kids to bed. Like, literally 2 minutes before I signed on, I was downstairs with my daughter reading stories, you know, trying not to tickle her and mess with her too much before she went to bed, because I'll get yelled at from my wife. But like, that's more important. So that non-negotiable, kind of the moral, the ethical non-negotiable, right? Let's get into kind of that. But then also, you referenced getting burned out. And I think kind of a nice close to this is, we talk the story, we talk the trajectory, we talk the way to do it, what to do, how to monetize it, right? We go through all the positives. Well, let's go into the negative, because it's something not everyone talks about. What are your non-negotiables now in that framework because you were burnt out and you were kind of done. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. So they continue to be developed because as I'm finally, I think, getting to a point where I'm really comfortable with, I am having to like spend a lot of time and resources now building these verticals that I really want to, just based on like what we're doing in life and everything. But my, like my non-negotiables are, number one, I try to stop looking at screens. It doesn't always work. Around like 9 p.m. Like that's something that I've tried to do. And I try to wait on holding off to replying to clients, replying to emails until at least like 8 or 9, until I'm up and like at least moving. I used to be like laying on my phone until like 11 and then waking up and being on my phone like 6. And it just like was driving me absolutely insane. And if anybody's ever experienced burnout, like it's funny because I feel like there's two different parties. We have the party that is, I think, in the old school set, like mindset, where it's like, you can't get burned out. You're just being lazy. You're just, and it's like, motherfucker, like you have never even like had to create things for like 10 hours a day for weeks on end. Like that shit takes a toll. Like you only have so much energy internally to do certain things. And I think that's very important to recognize and understand. And as I continue to build these things on my own, I'm getting better. And this is something my girlfriend's like keeps really like harping on with me, is building schedules that I set a time, certain times for certain things. So it's like, for example, with writing, I set 2 hours aside 4 or 5 days a week where I sit down, I set my cold brew to my side, I'll dim the room, I'll usually like light a candle if I feel like getting a little saucy. And that's all I focus on right there. And when I leave that 2 hour period, if there is something I still need to tidy up, I'll do it a little bit later in the afternoon, but I separate from that. And then I'll go film content or I'll go edit content, things that take my mind out of the current place where I just was. And those have become like strict non-negotiables with my time, especially as it gets more finite, is limiting how much I'm doing certain things so I don't get burnt out. Because when you're working a 9-to-5 and you're burnt out, you can drag your ass a little bit for a week and nobody's really going to say anything. And you're still probably going to be just fine getting your work done, because really, like, how much work are you really doing in those 8 hours of work? Yep. So now it's like, I'm trying to be much more conscious, because if I get burnt out, it's like, nobody's paying my bills. Like if I'm not working, I'm not making money. So how can I displace my efforts into a means that isn't killing me? Because at the end of the day too, Joe, like the goal of doing what I'm doing now is so I don't have to work as much. Like the goal is not to do these like 12 hour grindy days. Fuck that. The goal is to build enough systems and structures to where it needs much less time to actually maintain and still monetize and bring in money. And that's what I wish, like, I wish everybody could just have that in the world, honestly, because it would make, I think, the world a better place. We'd be a way better society when it comes to consumerism too, versus like what we are now, but we'll not even dive into that right now. But those are my non-negotiables. It's getting better at being honest with myself when it comes to separating myself from media, separating myself from screens and certain projects, and being very much more strict with how I'm putting that time aside. This is 2 hours for this. This is 4 hours for this. The only time it gets annoying these days is like when things do take a little bit longer. Like if I edit, like yesterday I edited a video and I do all my own editing. I do all my own filming. I do all my own writing. It takes a lot of time, but it took like 6 hours. And I was like, fuck, like I wanted to write. I wanted to do this other thing too. I wanted to build these two programs for these guys that I'm late on, and I couldn't get to it. And that's like being okay with also acknowledging like, hey, I didn't get to all these things today. It's fine. I'll get them done tomorrow. The world's going to keep spinning. The world's going to keep moving on. That's been also another tricky line that I'm trying to teach myself to walk and not get like super self-consumed by my own stress and anxiety anymore, because like I still have like functioning levels of anxiety and stress throughout the ass every day. But by structuring my time and being much more strategic with where I'm spending that time, it's helping me establish better boundaries and also really focus on the non-negotiables of the moment that I'm working with.
Very nice. So let's bring this home, right? One of the things we do with everybody is we ask the big three. So these are the three questions that no matter the conversation, no matter who, no matter what the background, no matter where it goes, it ties every episode together, right? So the first one, and you bring her up a few times, so I'm imagining she's going to come up again, right, is who coaches you and why?
Yeah, I think, honestly, if I had to give one person that probably plays the heaviest hand in helping me structure things, it's my girlfriend, she has been like just an unbelievable support system. Like, I obviously know more about these industries than her, but she has such a different outlook, and I value her opinion so much because she does have such a more structured, scheduled way of thinking of things. So she pretty much coaches me to like, honestly, reel me in and be like, hey, this is what you should probably focus on today, or this is how I would org this if I was your boss. And that really helps me then understand where I need to spend my energy. And it's like, it wasn't always like that. Like, it took me a while to, I think, grow up and realize like, hey, she's a huge support and she can be a huge ally if you just actually listen to her and let her. And I think it has, I don't think it has to do with being coachable, because I am very coachable. I think it's more of just like that. It's like the whole, it's my girlfriend. Like, I don't want her telling me what to do. Like, I'm a man, I could do what I want. But like, she's been, I think she's been like my greatest asset slash coach over the last 6 months to a year, at least. She's kept me sane. She's kept me on track. She helps me with visuals here and there, cause she's way more creative than I am. So she's been by far, I think, my greatest coach. She's not like the traditional, like teaching me the whole framework of the building the business. But when it comes to like the things that matter for me, like where it comes to scheduling, where it comes to how do I make all these ideas I have in my head actually come to life, she helps me with that.
So if you don't mind me asking, what does she do for a profession? Who is she? You know, is she a project manager? Is she an engineer? Is she a creative person? You know, kind of who is she? So people have a context to not only it's your relationship, but it maybe she has a specific background that kind of helps her do that. Is she a psychologist? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So she went to school for, she's going to kill me. I forget which world of engineering it is, but basically it's like the engineering that implements more efficient systems into businesses. So right now she's doing integration work at WeWork. And so basically like all the systems they have in their HR department and all the systems they have throughout a lot of the processes that they have internally, she's the person that makes sure those run smoothly and efficiently. So she has a very big background in that, but she also like is very creative. And I think we always talk about this too, like her upbringing, her family is very much like structured. This is the way. Like me being an entrepreneur freaks her parents out. I can tell. Like they're like, dude, you're way too much of a free spirit for us. And so like her upbringing was very structured, but like her dating me has also helped expose her to these worlds of like creativity and like creating things for a living. And so that's where she now has like side projects on the, for example, that she's doing things similar to me that she loves and gets to like have that itch scratched. So yeah, she's very much like structured, very calculated, very smart. And I'm more like, I'll figure it out as I go, I'll wing it. So it's like a nice little happy medium we walk. Gets us into trouble sometimes, but that's why we're in therapy.
Hey man. So it's funny, as you're going through this, I have so many comments, there's so many ways to go. So how about this, right? Going back to something you said, right? Like my parents were the same way as yours, right? My mom literally graduated college, started a job, and has had the same job for like 47 years, literally in the same building, in the same department, at the same hospital. Like she's a nurse, literally her entire life. My father's had like two or three jobs, but all within the same industry, all within the same like 5 mile radius kind of thing. So they're, you know, same thing. I don't know anyone in my family directly who is really like an entrepreneur, or I should say there are a few, but not like my immediate circle of people who I hung out with all the time. Right. So, you know, there were some here and there, but it was like, oh, like they were in my circle all the time. I was little, didn't make sense. Now, flash forward, my wife, her father, self-employed for 30 years, you know, had a wife, a mortgage, and two kids. And if he didn't make money, they weren't eating that day. So like when I left the traditional job of, you know, the 9 to 5 and strength, if it wasn't 9 to 5, but you know, the traditional W-2, and moved up here to Connecticut, started my own business, made it profitable, all this stuff, you know, her family was like, yeah, like, duh, like that's what you got to do. My family's like, holy shit, like, how are you going to make your money? Like, you don't have a job. Like, you don't work for a company. Like, yeah, no, my company is me. So, no, it's funny. I can relate to that. I can relate to the, like, her family making, like, being like, who is this guy? If they're very rigid, like my family is, but also both of our backgrounds. It's also why I think, to a point you made about coming from that background, why you could just pick up and leave. Like, my mother, like, I'm like a nomad to her. Like, she doesn't get me. It's like, you know, she like created me, raised me. And she's like, who is this child? You know, because I mean, on a whim, I just moved to Kansas for a job and I moved to New York for another job. And, you know, I've traveled all around the country just because, like the other day, Luke Bradford, who you probably heard the name, who's my person in Kansas to share my office with. Like at the end of the month in June, we just went up to the mountains and hiked in the mountains for 4 days. Like I never did that with my parents. My parents never took us like camping and did that. So like, I'm the weird, like, oh my God, you're in the woods. There's bears. Like, what are you going to do? It's like, well, you have bear spray, you have a gun, like, you know, like you do smart things, like, you know, with your food and stuff. So it's just really, some of that stuff was just making me laugh. I loved it. Yeah. You really want therapy? Get married, buy a house.
Yeah.
Have your third kid. Get me.
I mean, I don't know. Like I always say it and I try to say it often because I think there's also a stigma behind it. Mm-hmm. And even when we started going, I even had like one of my best friends is like, well, why are you doing that? You shouldn't have to do that at this age. And I'm like, dude, how does learning how to communicate more effectively and better and get out of my own head objectively ever be a bad thing? Like that's going to benefit business too. And he's like, oh, good point. And yeah. It's like, there's such a stigma around it, man. Fuck that. Who cares? No.
Well, even, I mean, right now, I know we're going on a little bit of tangent, but you know, like Simone Biles, like, okay. Oh, she's soft. You know, you got to win. Like, no, like if you're not in the headspace to perform at your best and what you're doing is literally the apex of all time at what you do. She is that good. She's doing things people can't do. And you're in the wrong headspace. That's how you get really hurt physically, mentally, right? I know there was a gymnast, I don't want to misquote, there was something like years ago, she was Russian or Ukrainian, Soviet bloc. I want to say it was the 80s or 90s. She came back from an injury, or they made her came back from an injury too early. She had like a broken foot or something. And I've had the story wrong, I apologize, but it's this idea. She had like a broken foot and she was like world champion level. And the Olympics or the world champion, it was the Olympics. They were coming up and her coaches like made her come back and made her do this stuff and like made her like did it. No choice, like da 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 da. And she would protest and she, like to her friends and to her family, like I can't, she would cry, but she went out and did it. And she was doing something so dangerous. I think it's banned, some crazy move that she slipped and actually broke her neck and was paralyzed. So it not only, it ruined her career, she was paralyzed and she passed away young due to complications. But it was one of those things like, and I remember hearing that, I heard that story from Dr. Kramer at UConn doing my undergrad. It was like a case study on like basically like the sports psych coach relationship, like never forcing people, taking feedback, like, you know, that stuff, tying in like the physical to the mental. And the Simone Biles thing the other day, I flashed back to that and was like, holy shit, like, people are going to give her crap, but she had the courage to step up and be like, I'm not good right now. How is that a bad thing? Like, how do people think that is like a negative to say, I'm not good right now? Or to your point, right? Like, why is it a bad thing to have someone to talk to help me be better? Like, again, people say therapist. It's like, oh, that's like, you're crazy. It's like, yeah. No, like, if I'm using it to leverage my business and my personal relationships to be better and have more effective communication and more effective thought processes and more positive outcomes, is that a good thing? It's like, is that a positive return on investment or like a bad one? So, you know, right. I'm with you, man. Some of the shit I don't get.
Dude, exactly. And it's like, it just killed me. Like these people are like, oh, she's soft. It's like, you guys don't even understand the level of functioning she's at, but also like the fucking trauma that she has to go through. And like, dude, don't even get me started, man. I can't even deal with that fucking shit.
That shit just bugs me again. Cause people, it's kind of like what me and you know, but a way to say it is the people who armchair quarterback. And again, that's keyboard warrior. That's armchair quarterback. That's whatever it is. That kind of thing where, mm-hmm. Again, you don't have to be an Olympic gold medalist to teach an Olympic gold medalist. But you have to have an Olympic gold medal mindset and an Olympic gold medal work ethic or education or whatever it is at, you know, the Olympic gold medal of, you have to have some context. And the people who have absolutely no fucking idea and then are like, oh yeah, well, you know, you could do that. And why can't you do that? It's like,
yeah,
it's tough. Cause I just want to be like,
Yeah, you're not like, they're not even functioning at a level that can even comprehend. And if you don't have the empathy to even understand, like, you're not even in the conversation. Like, there's literally no trying to talk to you.
Yeah. So yeah, I used one on someone the other day, and I was like, you know, you ever heard the expression like chess versus checkers? And it was like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, like you're playing chess. That person, they're playing Go. And this particular person I'm looking at, it's like, I thought you said chess and checkers. I'm like, I was like, that's my point. There's chess and there's checkers. They're on the same board. They're different games, but they have to do with strategy. So you thought it was chess and checkers, like two things that were the same. No. This guy over here, he's playing Go. It's a whole different game about strategy that has something that's levels and light years beyond chess and checkers. So you don't even understand it because you're not even aware that it exists. And it was like, I don't get it. I know you don't get it. That's my point. That's why you're not the guy and you're not ready. So, all right, before we get too far down the rabbit hole, question number two. What is the best thing you have ever purchased for less than $1,000? And in what context? Personal life, business life, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Damn.
This one always gets everyone. I'll play the do, do.
I have two.
Fastest answer ever.
No, it's difficult because I have two. So there's one. I have one of our pups, like, who's less than 1,000, but like, I'm a big dog guy. I have two dogs. Mm-hmm. And like, literally, they help keep me sane. So that was one of our best purchases, obviously, because it's like, it's a little homie, like the curated personality that we get to play with and interact with every day and like share well-being with. But also, I bought my camera that I use now for filming and content from a buddy for like $700. It's like normally like a $1,500 camera. Bought it on a whim while I was still at Barbin. I never had used it for like a year and a half. And now it's like, now that I'm in the YouTube game, like, I'm like, this was the best purchase because it like it shoots unlimited 4K. It never has issues. So I'm like, this is the best purchase I've ever done because it's like, it's literally helping now prop and propel all of these businesses. And at the time I bought it, and I had no idea I would even be using it for this. Like, I had an idea. I was like, I would love to make YouTube content, but I ended up making content with it for like a year and a half after that. Yeah. So I think that, like, from a business standpoint, would be bar none my best decision to purchase. And I didn't even mean to do it for the reason I'm using it now.
Nice. Usually, like I said, I usually play the Jeopardy music because people are like, damn, they think, and then they're like, sometimes you have to go back to it. So, you know, good answer, man. You had something ready. All right. Last one. And you hit on it a lot, so I'm not going to ask you to repeat everything you said, but any other points or thoughts or just other things that we haven't got to yet. So how do you find balance, but how do you also define balance and whatever that means to you?
I find balance by limiting this belief that I think America breeds in us, especially, that we have to be go, go, go 24/7 all the time. Otherwise we're lazy pieces of shit. We're not doing much. We're not competing with our peers. We're not going to ever be this thing that is arbitrary because we're all going to die and we can't take anything with us anyways. And life's pointless anyways. But I find balance in reminding myself like, hey, like, it's not that serious. Life will go on tomorrow. If you don't get to this, this person's not going to hate you if you take an extra day to get their shit done. Assuming, like, obviously there's a good relationship there, but I find balance in the fact that trying to do so many things at once, it's also equally comforting being able to say no to those things and know that the world's going to keep spinning. Mm-hmm. And then you said, how do I find balance? And then how do I define balance?
Define it, but then how do you define it? And again, in whatever context that statement means to you.
Yeah. So I would define balance as striking a level of like stress slash recovery stimuli that is enough to move the needle forward every single day. So you're putting yourself in enough uncomfortable situations day in and day out of things that you may not be the best at that end up making you a little bit better because you learn, you adapt, you get it wrong, you learn, you adapt. And then you're also taking the time to actually recover from these things. You're not just failing and then getting back up and going right again. You're taking time to sit back, assess what didn't work. Why didn't I like that? What was wrong with this? And I think about it, like, that's why it's always fun. Cause like whenever I go into SEO chats and stuff, I try to relate it to training. Cause all these like meatheads, that's what they get. But it's like, we need to create some level of discomfort and stress to grow mentally, physically, emotionally, et cetera. But we also need to give ourselves time to recover from that. And so that's like to the previous question, like saying no to things, being okay, pushing a project a day or two. That's when I'm recovering. That's when I'm trying to adapt and like make sure I'm giving my most energy to this project at hand. So I think if you can do that on a daily basis, or at least like on a weekly basis, where you're moving the needle forward and feeling uncomfortable and learning, but then also giving yourself enough time to recover and feel ready and prepped to go, that's a good definition of balance. Because the moment you start doing things that you love to a half-ass extent, or through resentment or hate or whatever anger it might be, even though those feelings aren't actually real, it's just what you're feeling due to external stimuli adding up, that's when I think balance is out of line. Because I don't think anybody should have to wake up and live a day of life that they absolutely hate. And I think I know a lot of things are out of our control, and that's a very privileged thing to say, but I think there are little things we can do to create that like stress / recover response that we want towards whatever we want to do in life, where we want to take our life, et cetera. So that's how I think I would define balance. Now, if you ask me that in a few months, in a year from now, I could give you something totally different because I am changing really fast right now.
All right. Well, speaking of, right, I think that's a great thing to close it on. Again, it's a great message and it's a great point to make in terms of, you know, approaching it with multiple perspectives, but still being positive, right? You said, you know, moving forward through that stress stimulus response. Again, I haven't heard it explained that way, so I'm still running it into my head, but that's an awesome way to think about it, right? So I think that's where we're going to wrap it. Tell people how they can find you, plug whatever you want to plug. Your moment in the sun, man.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much. If you want to support my endeavors, honestly, the simplest, easiest thing you can do is just drop a subscribe to the YouTube channel. That YouTube channel is just my name, Jake, J-A-K-E. Bolly, B-O-L-Y. I pump out a lot of content on shoes and fitness. So if you are at all interested in any of those worlds, consider subscribing. I think you'll enjoy the channel. I try to sink a lot of quality and time into the videos. Plus, if you don't like shoes, but you like fitness, I have something for you. You just don't have to watch every video. The subscribe helps though. You can find me on Instagram at Jake_Bolly. Same as like YouTube channel, just my name again. Shoot me a message. Shoot me whatever you want. We'll reply to you. I reply to everybody, usually with video messages, which always throws people off because they're not used to getting back face video messages, but it's just way easier for me to, I think, interact, and I get tired of typing, to be honest. And then also, if you want to check out the site, the training shoe and apparel review site, it's called thatfitfriend.com, thatfitfriend.com. And then through those means, you can find other channels. I'm not going to plug everything here, but yeah, I would really appreciate anyone listening if you want to support doing those things. And I really do appreciate the time, Joe.
Yeah, no problem. And hey, I appreciate the time. That's it, sir.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, man.